So we're talking about the first noble truth tonight, and some of us may have heard this kind of pop culture take on Buddhism that, oh yeah, Buddhism, it's, they teach that life is suffering, right? I don't know if any of you have heard that. That's not quite exactly how I understand it. I want to acknowledge that this foundational teaching that the Buddha offered 2,600 years ago, it's been handed on from teacher to teacher. It's recorded in the suttas and sutras of so many Buddhist lineages and traditions, and I feel deeply grateful for it. And I feel like every time I come back to this kind of beginning, foundational, one of the first teachings the Buddha offered after his enlightenment, every time I come back to it, I feel moved and challenged and like excited by it. I'm someone who came to the Dharma through the door of heartbreak. Some of us found practice out of a desire to feel calmer or reduce stress. Some of us came because we had maybe intellectual curiosity. Maybe we had read some interesting things about the Buddha Dharma and we felt intrigued to learn more. I arrived on the cushion in a period of my life that was marked by heartbreak and confusion and anger and terror. All of the things that I thought made my life were up in the air. I was in the midst of a slow, ugly death spiral of a marriage that was marked with a lot of ugliness. So I felt that I had a lot of pain and a lot of suffering. And somehow, through a string of goodness and people, offering me books to check out and saying, oh, you might come try this meditation group, I found myself on a cushion and hearing this transformational teaching of the Buddha and this truth he offered that in life we experience dissatisfaction and stress sometimes. It's not just me. This is this thing this guy taught 2,600 years ago, right? Like, it's really, really normal and workable. And it's like the first piece of this roadmap to freedom. And I thought, wow. Like, that felt so clean to me. And we call them the noble truths, and I felt like that way. I felt that way. I felt like, oh, somebody's finally telling the truth about the way things are and not trying to sugarcoat experience and not trying to manage it away. I do that enough. I don't need my practice spaces and my teachers and my roadmaps that I use to try to navigate life a little more skillfully. I don't need them to sugarcoat things. I'm real busy doing that right here. Okay? So this first noble truth that we experience suffering in life, it's situated in the context of the four noble truths. And I'll go through them briefly here. We'll investigate them in weeks to come. But the second noble truth is that there's a cause to this dissatisfaction and stress that we feel. And that causes the way we crave and cling for things to be different than they are. The third noble truth says that it's possible to experience cessation. There's a way out of being trapped in that. And the fourth noble truth is this path. It's like these action steps we can take to transform how we experience our lives. It doesn't mean that we stop experiencing pain. Like, that's not my understanding of practice. The Buddha had backaches and a murderous cousin, like, his whole life, post-enlightenment. You know, there's stories of him really being beset by difficulties. There's stories of him mourning when his dear students and friends died. It wasn't that his practice led to never feeling any difficulty or pain again. It's that it led to a capacity to meet that in a really different way, certainly a different way than I was accustomed to when I first heard these teachings, and pretty much a real different way than my default mode is even now. So these are the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha taught them in the turning of the wheel of the Dhamma Sutta, one of the first suttas that he taught. And he taught it in that first sermon, but also throughout decades and decades of teaching. And this is one of those things that reminds me that these are always fresh. It doesn't get too old for me. I haven't yet come to the point where I'm like over it because I don't suffer anymore. Always real fresh. And I know there's people in this room who have been practicing with these teachings for a long time. Most of us may have been just living in our experiences of occasional dissatisfaction and stress for our whole lives, you know? The word that I'm translating for dissatisfaction or stress, that word is dukkha. And you'll hear it a lot thrown around in Buddhist circles. I wonder if anyone here wants to throw out any alternative definitions of dukkha? Anyone?
What, the technical one?
Sure.
Well, it's made up of two words. Dukkha is... Du means... got this right, right? They're not unsatisfied. Yes, I mean, it's the... Okay. But ka is the... well, they used to have the big carts in those days, you know, wheels for the carts. So ka is the hole that the axle goes through in the wheel. Okay. So it's the empty space at the centre of things. So one translation is this unsatisfactory empty space or emptiness at the center of our beings.
Mm.
So,
or an ill-fitting. The do can also mean ill-fitting. So like ill-fitting. If you can imagine a wheel on an axle that doesn't quite fit right, you're in for a bumpy ride, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Mm.
That's the squeaky wheel hits the oil.
Well, we're going to oil. That's what the rest of the path is for. Or certainly suffering. You know, often the shorthand definition we use for dukkha is suffering. There's no single English word that really captures the nuance and expanse of this word, and so it can be situational. You know, sometimes maybe our experience of the First Noble Truth is stress or annoyance. Other times, like for me, when I first came to practice, it really did feel like just suffering, like really brutal. And when we use it in practice, we're really talking about the extra stuff we put on to that experience of suffering, because we're all going to have those pains in life. And the difficulties in life. So the question that we bring to our Dharma practice is, what do we do with them? Are we piling more on? That would really be the part that we're wanting to learn some more skillful ways to address, so that we can just make do with the bare facts of the difficulty without kind of making it worse for ourselves as we go along. The Buddha in the Samyutta Nikaya, one of the scriptures, the teachings as we have them written down, he taught, well, not one of the suttas, he taught regularly, birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha, death is dukkha, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are dukkha, association with the unbeloved is dukkha, separation from the loved is dukkha, not getting what is wanted is dukkha. So maybe just take a moment and check in and see if you have any examples from your own life you could think of where you didn't get what you wanted, got something you didn't want, or had something you wanted and lost it. Like anyone who has been through a breakup has probably experienced this. Anyone who didn't get the job they really, really wanted has experienced this. Anyone who's been stuck in an office module or a school study group with horrible, horrible, difficult people has experienced this. You know, so simple, so simple. So simple and so obvious that I think we can kind of miss the profound truth of it. So we have this general comment that there is dukkha in life that we will experience. And the Buddha went on and differentiated three sort of big basket kinds of dukkha. Not enough to just have one. So the first one is dukkha dukkha. A little sassy name there.
Dukkha dukkha.
Double dukkha. Yay. And this is just, these are the pains of our physical and emotional experience. Nothing fancy. This is the difficulty of aging and sickness and death we will all have. This is when we stub our toes and it really hurts and then we can't wear the shoes we wanted to wear, right? No big intellectual overlay on that one. It's just, this sucks. Double dukkha. Then there's sankhara dukkha. And the fancy kind of translations for sankhara dukkha would be the discomfort and disease that we experience around volitional formations or conditioned phenomenon. This means the difficulties that we have because things lead to other things in ways that we can't control and can't manage. And it doesn't have to mean things like physical things. Maybe we have an experience of wanting to impress someone or wanting to be perceived in a certain way. So we have our whole story built up about how much we want this person or this group to perceive us in a particular way. And this is all this built up stuff, like little loops in a chain leading onto each other. Somebody else could walk into the same room without all of those loops in the chain and have an entirely different experience of meeting this group or this person. But we might have an identity really tied up in how we want to be perceived here. Even within ourselves, I know I can, some of the frequent places in my meditation practice where I can notice, oh, I'm suffering here. It's when I'm busy trying to create stories in just in this head that make me look real good. like, there's not actually even anybody in this head with me that I'm impressing in the moment, right? But it's just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get enlightened soon. I might be enlightened now. I'm not gonna tell anyone. Like, I'm gonna play this low key. Like, this mind has gone there. So these identities that I just build up and that we might just build up for ourselves and for other people, and this is completely unmanageable. We can't make it stay. We can't ensure that it's going to work and manage all of the conditions, all of the links in the chain that are going to make it stay that way. This is sankhara dukkha. Viparinama dukkha is the unease that we feel about the uncertainty and change in life. More unmanageability there. If any of us have ever just made ourselves heartsick waiting to find out the thing, whatever it is, right? Did I get the job? Did I get the apartment? Is it going to work out? Will I get the thing in time for the other thing? That tension and stress and anxiety around the uncertainty of it, the pain over losing something dear. You just see a toddler go from glee at eating an ice cream to tears when the ice cream falls. Like, that's viparinama dukkha. Ah, anguish. We start practicing this early. So I think the definition I use often in my mind is that dukkha is just the stress of resisting the truth of what is, just resisting the reality of how things are. They may not be pleasant in this moment, but I can sure make them a whole lot more unpleasant by trying to resist it and pretend that it's not so. I wanted to talk a little bit about why we refer to these as the noble truths. I think there's a nobility in the fact that the experiences that the Buddha describes here are so pervasive to the human condition, so universal to how we experience some moments of life, that this is like a doorway to insight that's available for us frequently, often. Like, just the way we experience our lives and the difficulties we have are exactly where we can begin to get free. And there's a real nobility to that. A dictionary definition of nobility talks about possessing outstanding and excellent qualities. And I think that this clarity and willingness to look at the truth of the human condition without flinching, that's an excellent quality. That's very noble. It's something to really cultivate. So what do we do with it? You know, how do we relate with these difficulties without getting swamped by it? Because again, the Buddha Dharma doesn't teach life is suffering. You know, we're not meant to just drowned in that. The Buddha's taught that we are to know and comprehend or penetrate our experiences of suffering. And I feel like for me, it's been easy to be real flippant and be like, oh yeah, of course, like how could you not? But actually, how often do we? I don't always let myself feel the discomfort that might be present in that moment. I might be scared to, I might feel like I'm gonna get swept away by it and not ever be able to find anything else. I may feel like it's not flattering. I may feel like like, I don't want to own up to my habitual patterns and reactions that are creating more suffering for myself. And so with all of this evading and pushing away, I'm doing more numbing out and managing away and trying to avoid than I am actually just sitting with the bare truth of this moment. Ah, what's present here? Maybe it's unpleasant in this moment. Maybe it's not. I'm really just wanting to speak for myself here because I know that we all have different experiences, but I know that this heart and mind can create a whole chain of woe is me that I just can't shake off sometimes. I may not actually want to. I may know I'm really stuck in this story of how difficult it is, and I just like kind of roll around in it in a way. Like, let me complain to you again. I have this little test that I use for myself sometimes. If I hear myself complaining to someone for the third time, like to a third person in line about a particular situation in my life, I like to use that as a flag to really check. Whoa, is this still true? Because it could be the exact same words, right? I'm like a week later and I'm saying the exact same thing to the fifth person about the situation. What I've found for myself is that that might be more about my stories with which I'm trying to self-regulate difficult emotions than it is about my actual felt experience in that moment. I'm sitting there with a friend, we're having a lovely cup of tea. Actually, in that moment, it might not be as bad as what I'm going on about. I'm stuck. Mm-hmm. I don't want to let go of it sometimes. So that stuckness isn't really what the experience of knowing our suffering is. Like I said, I find it real clean when I'm just letting myself be present with what that is. Oh, tight stomach. Oh, itchy throat. Oh, racing thoughts and pressure. That feels a lot more clean than, and then they said that to me, and then they said this, and poor me. So another bit of the nobility of this truth is that it gives us an opportunity to learn to respond with compassion to our difficulties and the difficulties of others. It gives us this invitation that just keeps coming up again and again and again, because whether it's sitting at that cup of tea and me listening to your story of suffering, or realizing that I'm, you know, really experiencing my own suffering in that moment, the way to respond to it that I've found, once we see it, you know, we have that mindfulness where we see what's happening, and we get that insight, oh, I'm stuck, or oh, I'm not stuck, but I really am just experiencing this pain. We see it, mindfulness, and then we respond with some compassion. Oh, yeah, right. It's hard to be human sometimes. We feel pain and discomfort and unease and stress. How can we be a little bit kinder to ourselves, to others, when we find that that's where we've wandered into? The Buddha taught, it is, or he's quoted in the suttas as saying, it is only dukkha that I teach, and the cessation of dukkha. I've found that it's exactly by turning toward those difficult places that I begin to experience the cessation of the dukkha. And that includes, you know, it includes those long, heavy, congealed stories, like really being willing to turn toward them when the time is right and we feel really resourced to look at some of the difficult times in our life. I know for me, some of those most difficult times in my life have just expanded my heart many, many times over. So I'll offer a little kind of shortcut way to remember, or way to think about what the practice is to meeting dukkha, and then we'll practice for a few minutes and then have a conversation. I think of it sometimes as stay, stop, and soften. You know, the stay part is bringing that mindfulness and bringing that investigation and awareness of what's actually happening right now. Like, stay here, now, in that moment of pain and discomfort, rather than the shooting back to whose fault it was and shooting forward to how we're gonna. Like, stay here. What's it like right now, feeling that moment of dukkha? Is there something we might need to stop in that moment? You know, stopping harmful behaviors, stopping reactive patterns, stopping actions of body and speech and mind that are entrenching the problem and digging us deeper. Maybe there's a way, once we bring that awareness to the moment, there might be a little bit more capacity to see where we're digging our own hole with it and, like, stop. And we're not trying to, like, fix the problem yet. We're not trying to change the suffering. We're just letting ourselves not make it any worse. And then softening. Like, is there a little bit of space here for me to bring some warmth and kindness, something else besides the pain and difficulty? Sometimes, for me, just that idea of bringing more space can be real useful, because it doesn't require me to fix anything. It doesn't have an expectation about it that anything's gonna, like, get better. But it's just this place that feels so constricted and so tight, because, you know, I get tunnel vision when I'm suffering. That's all I see or hear or feel, whether it's physical pain or emotional pain. That's it, and it's so small and so tight. And so if I can just remember, oh, could I open up and hold that in a bigger space? It can make it a little bit softer, a little bit more workable, a little bit less overwhelming. Sometimes that's all I get. Okay, I'll take it. Sometimes that space even allows for something new to come in, though, and to realize, ah, but the tea tastes real good, and I'm grateful for that in this moment. Or, gosh, I'm thinking of a time I was stuck in traffic, like, all day long. It was one of those crazy commute days where I had, like, 4 different pickup, drop-off, crazy things to do, and everything was too tight. And I'm just remembering a moment in the car with, like my blood just boiling. It was so, and it was impossible, and everybody around me, and the tightness and constriction, and that I'm going to be late for this, and she talked too long. Like, ooh, ooh, so unpleasant. And, you know, using this practice, oh, wait, I'm just sitting here. God knows we're not moving anywhere. Let me just take a breath and check in. And realizing, like, the entire mind-body system is unpleasant right now. But, okay, you know, just sort of staying with that, stopping the stories about whose fault it was. Actually, in this particular instance, it sticks with me because I ended up being able to, like, look up from my personal hell realm and realize that it was, like, a really gorgeous day. Like, you know, the light coming through and the graffiti on the buildings was, like, gorgeous artwork, and like it transformed in that moment. This is not always my experience, but like that just happened in the simple, ordinary suffering of being stuck in a commute, right? So I think it is possible. You know, heartbreak brought me in to practice, and again and again, I have the opportunity now to bring my practice to places of heartbreak, or just places of heart yuck, right? Little, big, so many opportunities. On a really, really good day, I might even be able to feel grateful for those opportunities to grow now. I know it'll doesn't always seem like it in the moment, but bringing reflection to those places later is a place to really grow. So gosh, to be able to go from being completely stuck in suffering to actually being able to have a little inkling of gratitude for some of the suffering, you know, that's enough freedom for me. That's enough for me to keep working with right now. And I guess the final thing I'll say about it before we practice for a moment is that along the way of learning that, oh, this isn't personal, this experience we have of difficulty in the world, it's not personally against us, right? We live in a world in which there's so much suffering. And we live on a planet in which there's so much suffering. And when we're able to meet our own pain and difficulty with a little bit more skill and a little bit more capacity to show up for the truth of how it is, a little bit more capacity to even bring some kindness or some skillful means to how we meet that, we maybe have a little bit more capacity to show up in the world and bring witness and bring compassion and bring skillful means to how we could help and be present for the suffering in the world. And that means that that transformation is bigger than just my own personal, like, psychological experience of ease. It's part of what I get to do to really be part of creating the world I want to be part of. So what we're doing here tonight, what we're doing when we sit and practice, super important. It's super huge. It's not personal. It's not really just about us, right? So we'll let that just settle for a moment, and I'm going to lead a real short practice. So if you just want to be comfortable, you don't have to take a